Hello and welcome to The Preservationists, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomus Ray, the president of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society Board of Directors, and the host of The Preservationists. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we'll be diving into a celebration that has become woven into the identity of our coastal town, full of parades, royalty, maritime pride, and community spirit, the Astoria Regatta. But today we're not just talking about the regatta as we know it, we're going way back to the early years of the Astoria Regatta. From 1894 to 1916, the early years of a regatta were a mix of elegance and old-fashioned fun. Joining me today is Lori Serafin, one of my fellow board members at the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, who will be talking about the early years of the Astoria Regatta. And she also just happens to live in the Forestrom home, which is home to one of the most iconic regatta queens in Astoria's history, Allie Forestrom. Lori, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thank you. I love being here. I am preparing for a lecture about the early years of Astoria Regatta between 1894 and 1916. So let's go back 130 years to 1894. Astoria is a small town of about 9,000 people. There is no railroad to Portland. There's no highway. There are no cars in Astoria at that time. Astoria is connected to the world by ships, both sailing and steam. The sea is the lifeline of Astoria, so having a maritime festival was a really good idea. Now, there is an origin story of Astoria Regatta that's widely repeated, and I will read this origin story for you. Mr. E.J. Smith, city editor of the Daily Morning Astorian, is said to have originated the idea of Astoria Regatta. Some say it was to celebrate the end of the fishing season, or it was just a civic celebration. He worked with Frank Gunn, a hotel owner and secretary of the Astoria Football Club. With the support of the AFC and the backing of merchants, the first regatta was held in August of 1894. Now, I have done some newspaper research trying to kind of pinpoint what the newspaper of record had to say about the establishment of the regatta. And I found one tidbit that was mentioned in the paper in July 21st of 1894. It must have been by Mr. Smith, who was the city editor of the Daily Morning Astorian. And he said, yeah, let's have a regatta. This would be really fun. We have a lot of fine fishing boats and sailing yachts here. Let's do it. That was only 4 weeks before regatta. So obviously this was being planned way in advance.
Yeah, and when we think about how many people first attended the first regatta, do you know the number exactly?
The paper states there was 1,000 people in town for a regatta, which is pretty immense. There were so many people in town that residents of Astoria were asked to open their homes up for visitors.
And that's an amazing fact, because that's a pretty big figure for that time being, and also so little advertising, you know, just to begin right. with. So when we talk about the early days of the Astoria Regatta and the events that took place, what were the main events that were happening during the very first one?
Okay. Regatta was a 3-day event in 1894, and for most of years during that time period I'm talking about. During the daytime, there was a variety of contests. They were sailing events, rowing events, swimming events. And then in the evening, there was entertainment. It might be a moving picture show, music or dance, something like that. So it was both something to see or do during the day and evening.
Yeah. And when we think about like the marine side of things, what were those type of events? They were just mainly like just one is what it seemed like, not very many.
Oh, there was a lot of different types of racing, like the Whitehall boats would have a race. They would be like single and double manned. Now, a Whitehall boat is what you think of as the butterfly fleet, you know, the gillnetters. The cannery tenders were racing, you know, sculls, Indian canoes, Chinese barges, anything that was on the water that you could race, they raced it.
Mm-hmm. All that you can think of. Yeah. And then, you know, looking at like what happened with the regatta for the next years, can you kind of explain more of like the next years and how those evolved from the very first year? Because okay. It grew.
It did. Feeding on the success of the first regatta in 94, the event grew incrementally in 1895 and 1896. Now, 1897 was kind of a breakthrough year. A lot of attendance was gained, more thousands of people attended. There was more events, and it got a lot more attention up and down the Pacific coast. So it was not a regional event anymore. And then 1898 and 1899 were even larger. Now we can probably tie this to the beginning of the railroad. The Astoria Railroad run from Portland to Astoria opened in May of 1898. So thousands more people could come into Astoria from the Portland metro area. So very important.
And that's, you know, a lot of more people did show up.
Yes.
You know, as the regatta grew, we get people from all over the world all of a sudden starting to show up to participate in these events, which is a big deal.
Yeah. And then by 1900, it was firmly established as the maritime festival of the entire Pacific coast.
Which is a big title.
Yeah.
Very big title. Looking at like the next portions of the regatta in its earlier years, you know, were there any unique or local traditions or even figures tied to those early celebrations?
Well, I was looking at events over the years, and I see things that they do every year. Of course, it's regatta, it's racing, it's sailboat racing, it's rowing, and motor racing. Now, as time goes on, motorboat racing takes on more and more prominence, and there are fewer sailing events. The daring exploits of these early motor yacht racers are in the front pages of the papers, and everyone knows the names of these boats. And I kind of liken it to when I was growing up on the Columbia River in eastern Washington, being a hydroplane race fan in the 60s, where those hydroplanes, that was a big deal. And these were early hydroplanes.
Yeah. And this was like the very beginning of it.
Yes.
And do you feel like this was like more of a popular event that you saw in the, like, how did you think people may have reacted to it?
I see that there's headlines in the papers and then the boat names and they're following the boats and it's all very exciting, just like I remember growing up watching the hydroplanes. So it's probably really similar. So other traditions include the land parades. They got bigger and they got entries from further and further away. Every organization and every local festival in the entire region wanted to have an entry in the Astoria Regatta Parade. And many of them are really well photographed and documented, especially the Centennial Regatta Parade of 1911. Of course, and then there's the tradition of the Regatta Queen.
Yes.
There's the drama of the election. There's her reign at the regatta and then other activities and the Grand Regatta Ball. And
yes.
This was a big deal. The early regatta did not have a queen. The queen started in 1897 and continued, but there was no regatta queen in 1912 for some reason.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, one thing that's interesting about the history of the regatta queens is it's different than it is in today's present time, mm-hmm. where it's not necessarily a scholarship. Back then, they used to buy the votes.
Yes.
There's a history of that.
There is. The regatta queens were elected, but the votes were purchased. And this was a fundraising arm for regatta because this earned thousands of dollars. You could buy 10 votes for one penny. And it was not uncommon for someone to win an election with almost $1,000 worth of votes, which is a million votes.
And all the money that was raised by these regatta votes was used to fund the regatta. Is that correct to say?
Yes.
Yes. And that's why it could expand to so many things.
Right. There was many ways that Regatta was funded. One was through subscriptions, where a regular person would buy a subscription to Regatta to be a supporter, and then donations from merchants, and then fees to get into the races, and then the Regatta Queen elections.
So they had multiple different ways.
Yes, but Regatta was not always well-funded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we kind of think of like the beginning days and the funding of it all, there was a lot of events that took place, many different throughout the town. There was the balls and there was the parties. And these were very, you know, very classy events where you would show up. They were the places to be, you know, live music and dancing. Mm-hmm. You know, what were some of those other, you know, events that, you know, maybe not today happened, but back then?
Well, I think in an effort to make Regatta more accessible to everybody, they added more land contests. Okay, so a lot of these were track and field events, you know, foot races, javelin throw, high jump, that kind of thing, bicycle races, grease pig, you know, climbing the greased pole, logging contests, you know, where they, you know, those lumberjack contests, that
yeah.
kind of thing. And then I read something about a Finnish pillow contest, and I'd love to know what that is. If anyone knows, let me know.
Yes. When we think about the evolution of all of that, can you tell us a little bit about why that pivot might have taken place? Because, you know, you did say it's due to accessibility, but was that just because they wanted to grow it, or what are your thoughts on that?
Have you ever watched a sailboat race?
Maybe not the most interesting thing.
Yeah.
Not interesting.
Especially if there's not a lot of wind. I think that to have more things to more people, they had to expand the venues. Mm-hmm. And sitting in a grandstand watching a sailboat race.
Yeah. Not the first thing on the to-do list. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we kind of think of, you know, one of your things that you know a lot about is Allie Forstrom and her story of the Regatta.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I will say this, you live in the Forstrom house.
I do.
So you spent a lot of years, many, many years I know, spent researching. And I did want to hear the story about Allie Forstrom and her Regatta journey, because there is a big journey of it.
Okay. Allie was the Regatta Queen in 1914. And at this time, when you look at the list of the Regatta Queens, you'll see that she's the one that stands out as being a little different than the others. She was elected, of course, but this was during a time when votes were purchased, and she won with 967,000 votes. Which is $967. So, and we don't know how many of those votes Dr. Forstrom bought, but I suspect it was quite a few. So, Allie was a 28-year-old Finnish immigrant with fluent English skills. She was the wife of Dr. Forstrom, a prominent local surgeon. He was 20 years her senior. Okay. She was an unusual Regatta Queen. She was not a descendant of Oregon pioneers. She was not a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant or the daughter or wife of a rich capitalist. I think her reign attracted attention because of these facts. In a few memoirs that I have found of local Astorians, they mention a little bit of talk and gossip about her reign in a nice way, but I can read between the lines. One woman said that there was talk of her being elected, but nevertheless, she was a beautiful Regatta Queen. This leads me to believe that she was not well accepted by Astoria's social elite.
Mm-hmm. And that was because she had these differences. It wasn't the
right.
typical of what the Regatta Queens were.
In the past,
yes.
Correct.
And then looking at that research of how many Regatta Queens came prior to her, she was, what was the number?
Well, there was Regatta Queens from 97 to 1916 minus 1912. So what, mm-hmm. about 15?
About the 16, 15.
Yeah.
So prior to her, she didn't necessarily fit that.
No, she's the one with the ethnic name.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That stands out. And
she's Finnish.
And she's Finnish.
Yeah, she's a Finnish immigrant. And you actually have an interesting story about that. There was a woman who snuck
yes.
into a party to see yeah. her.
I met a woman who lives in Deep River, and I was at her home, and there was a picture of Allie Forstrom on her dining room table. And I was like, oh my God, that's odd. She told me the story that her grandmother took a ferry from Deep River to Astoria on the day of Queen Allie's coronation and the night of her Queen's Regatta ball at the Astoria Weinhardt Hotel, because she was going to crash the ball because she wanted to see the Finnish queen.
Yes, and that really is an amazing thing to kind of hear, that it would be that much of an importance for the Finnish community to be able to have that representation, because that's a big deal. Yeah. During that time.
Yeah.
And especially just given the facts that maybe she wasn't accepted, that it would be very big, because it's almost like she opens a door, completely. Yes. New door for people. Right. So I think that's a really funny story. And then when we look at, you know, her year of her reign in the court, it's kind of more of a special event, because she kind of went all out in the sense of, you know, she turned the Forstrom home into the hub of the regatta.
She did. It was the social hub of the regatta. Well, okay, so the election became final the evening of June 24th. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind that the regatta starts on July 2nd, and her coronation is the morning of Saturday, July 2nd. She's got just a bit of time. So the paper states that she rests for a day because she's very tired. And then she went to Portland. So she had to get 3 gowns, a coronation robe. She had to select her court of maids, which are her support staff,
yes.
I guess. She met with the Portland Rose Festival queen.
And that was who at the time?
It was Thelma Hollingsworth.
Oh.
She was fast friends with Thelma.
Oh, nice.
So
good
they connection. Were in the paper together. It's very cute. And so then Allie returned to Astoria on a special train just for the regatta people and came back to Astoria. In the meantime, Dr. Forstrom was coordinating a redecoration of the Forstrom house, which was a single-story house at the time. It hadn't been remodeled yet. And he put in a dance floor in the basement, and he had the empty lot next to the house lit up with 500 light bulbs, so they could have dining and dancing out there.
You know, there was a lot of different other social events too. Like they had stuff in the yard too. They mm-hmm. had games in the yard,
right.
Live music, and, you know, many people showed up. Like yes. You said that, how many guests would you expect?
I'm sure the Forstrom house was filled to the brim, but the Forstrom house was clearly the place to be according to the society columns at the time.
Yes, absolutely. We'll return back to our interview with Lori Serafin in just a moment. I'd like to invite you to this month's Topics in Preservation. Topics in Preservation is a monthly discussion and conversation hosted by the Lower Columbia Preservation Society. Join us on Wednesday, July 16th at 6 p.m. at our new LCPS headquarters located on 591 12th Street, Astoria, Oregon. We hope to see you there for an open conversation. This event is free, all ages, and open to the public. For more information, visit our website at www.lcpsociety.org, and we hope to see you there. Now, returning back to our interview with Lori Serafin about the early years of the Astoria Regatta, 1894 to 1916. So, Lori, when we think about Allie Forstrom's coronation for Regatta Queen, who was a part of this event?
Oh, there was about 8 or 9 maids. And some of them were friends, and some of them were friends of the Admiral.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were daughters of business associates of Dr. Forstrom. It seems to be a mix of people, but some of them are from Portland, and one was from Montana. So it wasn't just Astoria girls.
Oh.
It was
kind of spread out.
It was spread out.
Interesting. Yeah.
And you see that in the other courts also. It's not just Astoria girls.
They can kind of pick and choose.
Yes.
And these are typically, you know, are they more friends that they pick, or is these, you know, other like partners, like you said, business partners?
Yeah, I think it's a mix.
It's a mix of it.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of different motivations for picking your maids.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
And then, of course, then there's another person that's actually not talked about, but in 1914, there was another position, and she was called the Goddess of Liberty, and it's the famous Emma Wooten.
So that's another huge portion of that history. Yeah. Very cool. You know, one thing that you mentioned earlier was, you know, Ali's coronation date, it was in June, for the regatta to start in July. That's another portion of the history of the regatta. Sometimes it'd be on the 4th of July weekend, but... Mm-hmm. Or it could be the end of August.
Yes, it varies when it is. It seems like in some of the early years, around 1910 to 1915-ish, there's a July date, and they kind of fold it into the 4th of July celebration. And then other years, it's in mid to late August, and I don't know how they choose dates.
So, you know, when we think about these legacies that these regatta queens have left, especially with Ali Forstrom, how are these remembered, and especially through your connection with her home, because you live in the Forstrom?
Oh, well, I think if Ali left a legacy, because, you know, she left Astoria in 1925, and she's probably long forgotten for most people, except through me, I think that Ali smashed the glass ceiling for female immigrants in Astoria society. This demonstrated the upward mobility, both social and economic, of immigrants, especially the Finnish immigrants. Of course, her legacy is strong in our home. The Forstrom House is today what it is due to Ali's remodel of the house in 1916 after her year reign regatta queen. The remodel was lavish and reflects her taste. In this tradition, I commissioned an oil painting of Ali that hangs in our grand staircase to celebrate her and her extravagances. I thought it was only right.
Absolutely. Lori, what was the most interesting thing you found in your research of the Astoria Regatta?
I think that the variety of events was quite shocking. I was going through the 1899 program and found a balloon ascension. And I've heard Sam Rasko talk about this. I guess it didn't end all that well. So I need to find out more about that before my lecture.
That's amazing.
At the Centennial Regatta of 1911, there was a flying machine that did an exhibition. And the front page of the paper had mention of it because there was no crash. It actually worked. Well. And it took off and it landed.
Yes. And that's just, those are just interesting events and little fun things about it. And all of your research, you actually are preparing for a presentation, the Pacific Distillery. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. Me and lecture partner, Eric Wheeler, are starting up the LCPS Presents Lecture Series in August at Pacific Distillery. We typically lecture on second Tuesday, but this year, because of regatta, we're actually going to do the lecture on Tuesday, August 5th at 7 p.m. And Astoria Regatta starts the next day on August 6th. So we kind of think of it as the first event of regatta.
And when you thought about this presentation in general, what do you feel has been the most important thing that you have learned about the history of Astoria Regatta?
I was kind of charmed at the history and the celebration of the maritime influence here in Astoria. Most people don't know this, but I'm a sailor myself and owned a sailboat from age, I don't know, how old was I, 25? Up until quite recently, and my husband and I have sailed back and forth to Hawaii. So, you know, I'm a sailor, I love sailboat racing and regatta, and so this is a very special thing for me.
Yeah, well, and you know that this regatta, the history is really a big portion of Astoria because we are still carrying on this tradition of celebrating Astoria Regatta even to this day, you know,
yes.
In present time.
Right.
This is an important event, and it's a huge part of Astoria's identity.
Yes.
And one phrase we talked about was, you got a regatta.
Yes.
Big portion of it. So what does all this research, you know, what do you hope people get out of the Astoria Regatta that you wish more people knew about?
I think it's important to know the heritage, because to know where you're going, you need to know where you came from.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely.
That's my feeling about it. And I think it's important to know this and how the event has changed over time. Mm-hmm. And it's not just some quirky little, you know, local thing. This has... Yeah. this is an important event with an important mm-hmm. heritage.
Yeah. There was an evolution of it, too, yes. that it has changed over time, where we don't do all those events anymore, right. where it's more of like a different focus. And even with how the queens are selected, mm-hmm. it's no longer you pay for the votes. This is a yeah. scholarship program, right. which benefits our young woman in the community. Mm-hmm. Very big portion of it. Yeah. And then also the age range was different, too.
Right. Yeah. In the past, in these early years of regatta, most of the queens were between age 18 and 30. And it was a mix of married and unmarried women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mostly socially prominent.
Yeah. So when you think about the Astoria Regatta today and with the research you did, is there any takeaway pieces that you feel like were the most standout portion to you?
When I look at the regatta over time, I think it, in its current format, it's a scaled down, streamlined version of what it was that celebrates our civic pride with a little bit of maritime influence thrown in there. I see it as a very egalitarian event where anyone can participate. Anyone can go to the small town parade. It's really fun. It's fun to participate in it. It's fun to mm-hmm. watch it. Or you can, at the apex, you know, be a regatta queen contestant. Mm-hmm. There's something for everyone.
There is. Yeah. And it's a really great tradition that we continue to have in Astoria. And now with your presentation, you're covering very specific years.
Yes.
Why did you choose those years specifically?
I've envisioned this as a lecture series I could do over several years. There's hiatuses in between regatta. It was not every year for 130 years. Mm-hmm. There were periods of time that it did not occur, like World War II, World War I, the Astoria Fire. Yeah. And so I thought I could start with the early years, and mm-hmm. the next year I could start with the year it was reprised, 1932, and go to the World War I years mm-hmm. and knock off that chunk. And then maybe the following year, go into more modern times.
Yeah.
Because I think there's an interest out there.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because, you know, even with each year, there's history to it. Because mm-hmm. even when we think back of last year, 2024, that's when they brought back the swimming portion here in Astoria, modern day.
And when you look at the programs from the 1890s, swimming was a part of regatta.
Where you would swim across the Columbia River.
Yeah, yeah. Or a short course.
Yes, yeah. some portion of it. Yeah, so it's just kind of amazing to see that we can connect each year. And each year is its own special entity in that sense.
Yes.
And, you know, hopefully we'll see a few listeners at your presentation.
I hope so. And get there early to get a seat.
Yes.
Order a cocktail.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Lori, for joining me today on the show. It's been super fascinating to hear about the Astoria Regatta. And a huge kudos to all the research you've been conducting, because I know it's been hours.
I appreciate that.
Thank you to my guest this month, Lori Serafin, for sharing about the early years of the Astoria Regatta. Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode. Be sure to tune in again next month. The Preservationist airs every third Tuesday of the month on KMUN at 9:30 a.m. I'd like to give a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the members, volunteers, and staff of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and a special thanks to Camila Swerdloff for producing the theme song of The Preservationist. The Preservationist is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomus Ray. I'm Astronomus Ray, and remember, when it comes to preservation, anyone can be a preservationist. Thank you for listening.